attendance requirements and attention from CIA interrogators, debriefers, analysts, and senior CIA leadership. Further, as noted, a significant amount of the disseminated intelligence reporting from KSM that the CIA identified as important threat reporting was later identified as fabricated.
H. The growth of the CIA's detention and interrogation program. 1. 53 CIA detainees entered the CIA detention and interrogation program in 2003. While the CIA held detainees from 2002 to 2008, early 2003 was the most active period of the CIA's detention and interrogation program. Of the 119 detainees identified by the committee as held by the CIA, 53 were brought into custody in 2003. And of the 39 detainees the committee has found to have been subjected to the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques, 17 were subjected to such techniques between January 2003 and August 2003. The CIA's enhanced interrogations during that time were primarily used at Detention Site Cobalt and Detention Site Blue. Other interrogations using the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques took place at a CIA redacted in-country redacted, at which at least one CIA detainee was submerged in a bathtub filled with ice water. In 2003, CIA interrogators sought and received approval to use the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques against at least five detainees prior to their arrival at a CIA detention facility. In two of those cases, CIA headquarters approved the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques before they were requested by CIA personnel at the detention sites. 2. The CIA establishes Detention Site Black in country redacted and Detention Site Violet in country redacted. The CIA entered into an agreement with the redacted in country redacted to host a CIA detention facility in 2002. In 2003, CIA headquarters invited the CIA station in country redacted to identify ways to support the redacted in country redacted, to demonstrate to redacted and the highest levels of the country redacted government that we deeply appreciate their cooperation and support for the detention program. The station responded with a redacted $1 million wish list, redacted. CIA headquarters provided the station with redacted $1 million more than was requested for the purpose of the redacted subsidy. CIA detainees were transferred to Detention Site Black in country redacted in the fall of 2003. In August 2003, the ambassador in country redacted sought to contact State Department officials to ensure that the State Department was aware of the CIA detention facility and its potential impact on our policy vis-a-vis the country redacted's government. The U.S. ambassador was told by the CIA station that this was not possible, and that no one at the State Department, including the Secretary of State, was informed about the CIA detention facility in country redacted. Describing the CIA's position as unacceptable, the ambassador then requested a signed document from at least the President's National Security Advisor, describing the authorities for the program, including a statement that the CIA's interrogation techniques met legal and human rights standards, and an explicit order to him not to discuss the program with the Secretary of State. CIA headquarters then sought the intervention of Deputy Secretary of State Richard Armitage, who called the U.S. ambassador. Deputy Secretary Armitage told the CIA to keep him and the Secretary of State informed so that they would not be caught unaware when an ambassador raised concerns. Nearly a year later, in May 2004, revelations about U.S. detainee abuses at the U.S. military prison in Abu Ghraib, Iraq, prompted the same U.S. ambassador in country redacted to seek information on CIA detention standards and interrogation methods. In the fall of 2004, when redacted U.S. ambassador to country redacted sought documents authorizing the program, the CIA again sought the intervention of Deputy Secretary Armitage, who once again made strong remarks to the CIA about how he and the Secretary of State were cut out of the NSC, National Security Council, clearance coordination process with regard to the CIA program. According to CIA records, Armitage also questioned the efficacy of the program and the value of the intelligence derived from the program.
Note 570. The CIA's June 2013 response states that, with regard to the study's claims that the State Department was cut out of information relating to the program, the record shows that the Secretary of State, Deputy Secretary of State, were aware of the sites at the time they were operational. As detailed throughout the committee study, CIA records indicate the Secretary of State was not informed of the CIA detention site locations. During meetings with the CIA in the summer of 2013, the committee requested, but was not provided, documentary evidence to support the assertion in the CIA's June 2013 response.
While it is unclear how the ambassador's concerns were resolved, he later joined the chief of station in making a presentation to Country Redacted's Redacted on the CIA detention and interrogation program. The presentation talking points did not describe the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques, but represented, without the full range of these interrogation measures, we would not have succeeded in overcoming the resistance of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and other equally resistant HVDs. The talking points included many of the same inaccurate representations made to U.S. policymakers and others, attributing to CIA detainees critical information on the Karachi plot, the Heathrow plot, the Second Wave plot, and the Garuba cell, as well as intelligence related to Isa al-Hindi, Abu Talha al-Pakistani, Hambali, Jose Padilla, Binyam Mohammed, Sajid Badat, and Jafar al-Tayyar. The presentation also noted that the President of the United States had directed that he not be informed of the locations of the CIA detention facilities to ensure that he would not accidentally disclose the information. In a separate country, Country Redacted, the CIA obtained the approval of the Redacted and the political leadership to establish a detention facility before informing the U.S. ambassador. As the CIA chief of station stated in his request to CIA headquarters to brief the ambassador, Country Redacted's Redacted, and the Redacted probably would ask the ambassador about the CIA detention facility, after Redacted delayed briefing the Redacted for months, to the consternation of the CIA station, which wanted political approval prior to the arrival of CIA detainees. The Redacted Country Redacted official outside of the Redacted, aware of the facility, was described as shocked, but nonetheless approved. By mid-2003, the CIA had concluded that its completed but still unused holding cell in Country Redacted was insufficient, given the growing number of CIA detainees in the program, and the CIA's interest in interrogating multiple detainees at the same detention site. The CIA thus sought to build a new, expanded detention facility in the country. The CIA also offered Redacted $1 million to the Redacted to show appreciation for the Redacted support of the program. According to a CIA cable, however, the Redacted, while the plan to construct the expanded facility was approved by the Redacted of Country Redacted, the CIA and Redacted developed complex mechanisms to Redacted in order to provide the Redacted $1 million to the Redacted. Redacted, in Country Redacted, complicated the arrangements. When the Country Redacted requested an update on planning for the CIA detention site, he was told, Redacted, inaccurately, that the planning had been discontinued. In Redacted, when the facility received its first CIA detainees, Redacted informed the CIA, Redacted, that the Redacted of Country Redacted probably has an incomplete notion regarding the facility's actual function, i.e., he probably believes that it is some sort of redacted center. 3. At least 17 CIA detainees subjected to the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques without CIA headquarters authorization. CIA cables from the spring of 2003 and afterwards describe multiple examples of interrogation practices at CIA detention sites that were inconsistent with the CIA's detention and interrogation guidelines. CIA officers at detention site Cobalt, led principally by Chief of Interrogations, Redacted, also described a number of interrogation techniques in cables that were not approved by CIA headquarters. CIA headquarters failed to respond, inquire, or investigate the following. Cables revealing that the CIA's chief of interrogations used water dousing against detainees, including with cold water and/or ice water baths, as an interrogation technique without prior approval from CIA headquarters. Cables and records indicating that CIA detainees who were undergoing or had undergone the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques were subjected to rectal rehydration without evidence of medical necessity, and that others were threatened with it. Cables noting that groups of four or more interrogators who required practical experience to acquire their CIA interrogation certification were allowed to apply the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques as a group against a single detainee, and cables revealing that the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques were used at CIA redacted, that were not designated as CIA detention sites. In the first half of 2003, the CIA interrogated four detainees with medical complications in their lower extremities. Two detainees had a broken foot, one detainee had a sprained ankle, and one detainee had a prosthetic leg. CIA interrogators shackled each of these detainees in the standing position for sleep deprivation for extended periods of time until medical personnel assessed that they could not maintain the position. The two detainees that each had a broken foot were also subjected to walling, stress positions, and cramped confinement. Despite the note in their interrogation plans that these specific enhanced interrogation techniques were not requested because of the medical condition of the detainees. CIA headquarters did not react to the site's use of these CIA enhanced interrogation techniques despite the lack of approval. Over the course of the CIA program, at least 39 detainees were subjected to one or more of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. CIA records indicate that there were at least 17 CIA detainees who were subjected to one or more CIA enhanced interrogation techniques without CIA headquarters approval. This count includes detainees who were approved for the use of some techniques but were subjected to unapproved techniques, as well as detainees for whom interrogators had no approvals to use any of the techniques. This count also takes into account distinctions between techniques categorized as enhanced or standard by the CIA at the time they were applied.
Note 590. The CIA's June 2013 response objects to the committee's count, arguing that no more than seven detainees received enhanced techniques prior to written headquarters approval. The CIA's June 2013 response then asserts that the study miscounts because it confuses the use of standard techniques that did not require prior approval at the time they were administered with enhanced techniques that did. This statement in the CIA's June 2013 response is inaccurate. First, prior to January 2003, the CIA had not yet designated any technique as a standard technique. Because sleep deprivation was included in the August 1, 2002 OLC memorandum approving the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques on Abu Zubaydah, the committee included among the 17 CIA detainees subjected to sleep deprivation without CIA headquarters authorization prior to January 2003. In January 2003, sleep deprivation under a specific time limit was categorized as a standard CIA interrogation technique. Second, the January 2003 guidelines state that advanced CIA headquarters approval was required for standard techniques whenever feasible. For this reason, the committee did not include cases where CIA interrogators failed to obtain authorization in advance, but did acquire approval within several days of initiating the use of the standard techniques. Finally, water dousing was not characterized as a standard technique until June 2003. In numerous cases prior to June 2003, water dousing was explicitly described in CIA cables as an enhanced interrogation technique. The committee thus included, among the 17, CIA detainees subjected to water dousing prior to June 2003 without CIA headquarters authorization. The distinction between standard and enhanced interrogation techniques, which began in January 2003, was eliminated by CIA leadership in 2005. See Volume 1 and Volume 3 for additional details.
The 17 detainees who were subjected to techniques without the approval of CIA headquarters were Rafiq Bashir Alhami, Tafiq Nasir Awad Al-Bahani, Hikmat Nafi Shaukat, Lufti Al-Arabi Al-Garisi, Muhammad Ahmad Ghulam Rabbani, a.k.a. Abu Badir, Gul Rahman, Abid Al-Rahim Al-Nashiri, Ramzi bin Al-Shib, Asadallah, Mustafa Al-Hassawi, Abu Khalid, Laid bin Duman, a.k.a. Abu Hudaifa, Abid Al-Karim, Abu Hazim, Saeed Ibrahim, Abu Yasir Al-Jazari, and Suleiman Abdullah. In every case except Al-Nashiri, the unauthorized interrogation techniques were detailed in CIA cables, but CIA headquarters did not respond or take action against the CIA personnel applying the unauthorized interrogation techniques. This list does not include examples in which CIA interrogators were authorized to use the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques, but then implemented the techniques in a manner that diverged from the authorization. Examples include Abu Zubair and, as detailed, KSM, whose interrogators developed methods of applying the waterboard in a manner that differed from how the technique had previously been used and how it had been described to the Department of Justice. This count also excludes additional allegations of the unauthorized use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. Over the course of the CIA's detention and interrogation program, numerous detainees were subjected to the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques by untrained interrogators. As noted, the CIA did not conduct its first training course until November 2002, by which time at least 9 detainees had already been subjected to the techniques. The DCI's January 28, 2003 guidelines, which stated that the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques may be employed only by approved interrogators for use with specific detainees, raised the additional issue of approved techniques used by unapproved interrogators. The January 28, 2003 DCI guidelines did not explicitly require CIA headquarters to approve who could use the CIA's standard interrogation techniques, including techniques that were not previously considered standard, and that would later be reclassified as enhanced interrogation techniques. Rather, the DCI guidelines required only that all personnel directly engaged in the interrogation be appropriately screened, that they review the guidelines, and that they receive appropriate training in the implementation of the guidelines. 4. CIA headquarters authorizes water dousing without Department of Justice approval. Application of technique reported as approximating waterboarding. CIA headquarters approved requests to use water dousing, nudity, the abdominal slap, and dietary manipulation, despite the fact that the techniques had not been reviewed by the Department of Justice. Interrogators used the water dousing technique in various ways. At detention site Cobalt, detainees were often held down, naked, on a tarp on the floor, with a tarp pulled up around them to form a makeshift tub, while cold or refrigerated water was poured on them. Others were hosed down repeatedly while they were shackled naked in the standing sleep deprivation position. These same detainees were subsequently placed in rooms with temperatures ranging from 59 to 80 degrees Fahrenheit. Other accounts suggest detainees were water doused while placed on a water board. Although CIA headquarters approved the use of the water dousing interrogation technique on several detainees, interrogators used it extensively on a number of detainees without seeking or obtaining prior authorization from CIA headquarters. In interrogation sessions on April 5, 2003 and April 6, 2003, senior CIA interrogator redacted and another interrogator used the water dousing technique on detainee Mustafa Al-Hausawi at detention site Cobalt. Al-Hausawi later described the session to a different CIA interrogator, redacted, who wrote that Al-Hausawi might have been waterboarded or subjected to treatment that could be indistinguishable from waterboard. An email from the interrogator stated that, "We did not prompt Al-Hausawi. He described the process in the table on his own. As you know, I have serious reservations about watering them in a prone position, because if not done with care, the net effect can approach the effect of the waterboard. If one is held down on his back, on the table, or on the floor, with water poured in his face, I think it goes beyond dousing, and the effect to the recipient could be indistinguishable from the waterboard. I have real problems with putting one of them on the waterboard for dousing. Putting him in a head-down attitude and pouring water around his chest and face is just too close to the waterboard, and if it is continued, may lead to problems for us.
Note 620. Volume 3 of the committee study includes a CIA photograph of a wooden waterboard at detention site Cobalt. As detailed in the full committee study, there are no records of the CIA using the waterboard interrogation technique at Cobalt. The waterboard device in the photograph is surrounded by buckets with a bottle of unknown pink solution filled two-thirds of the way to the top and a watering can resting on the wooden beams of waterboard. In meetings between the committee staff and the CIA in the summer of 2013, the CIA was unable to explain the details of the photograph to include the buckets, solution, and watering can, as well as the waterboard's presence at detention site Cobalt.
Several months later, the incident was referred to the CIA Inspector General for investigation. A December 6, 2006 Inspector General report summarized the findings of this investigation, indicating that water was poured on Al-Hawsawi while he was lying on the floor in a prone position, which, in the opinion of at least one CIA interrogator quoted in the report, can easily approximate waterboarding. The OIG could not corroborate whether Al-Hawsawi was strapped to the waterboard when he was interrogated at detention site Cobalt. Both of the interrogators who subjected Al-Hawsawi to CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques on April 6, 2003, said that Al-Hawsawi cried out for God while the water was being poured on him, and one of the interrogators asserted that this was because of the cold temperature of the water. Both of the interrogators also stated that Al-Hawsawi saw the waterboard and that its purpose was made clear to him. The Inspector General report also indicates that Al-Hawsawi's experience reflected the way water dousing was done at detention site Cobalt, and that this method was developed with guidance from CIA, CTC attorneys, and the CIA's Office of Medical Studies. During the same time that Al-Hawsawi claimed that he was placed on the waterboard in April 2003, a CIA linguist claimed that CIA detainee Abu Hazim had also been water doused in a way that approximated waterboarding. Redacted, a linguist in country redacted from redacted 2003 until redacted 2003, told the OIG that when water dousing was used on Abu Hazim, a cloth covered Abu Hazim's face and, redacted, CIA officer, poured cold water directly on Abu Hazim's face to disrupt his breathing. The linguist said that when Abu Hazim turned blue, physician's assistant, redacted, removed the cloth so that Abu Hazim could breathe. This allegation was reported to the CIA Inspector General on August 18, 2004. The CIA reported this incident as a possible criminal violation on September 10, 2004, to the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Eastern District of Virginia. The Inspector General report included that there was no corroboration of the linguist's allegation, stating, "There is no evidence that a cloth was placed over Abu Hazim's face during water dousing, or that his breathing was impaired." 5. Humbly fabricates information while being subjected to the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. In the summer of 2003, the CIA captured three Southeast Asian operatives, Zubair, Lily, and Humbly. These captures are discussed later in this summary in the section entitled The Capture of Humbly. In August 2003, Humbly was captured and transferred to CIA custody. Despite assessments that Humbly was cooperative in the interview process without the use of more intrusive standard interrogation procedures, much less the enhanced measures, the CIA interrogators requested and obtained approval to use the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques on Humbly approximately a month after his transfer to CIA custody. In late 2003, Humbly recanted most of the significant information he had provided to interrogators during the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques, recantations CIA officers assessed to be credible. According to a CIA cable, he had provided the false information in an attempt to reduce the pressure on himself and to give an account that was consistent with what Hambali assessed the questioners wanted to hear. CIA officers later suggested that the misleading answers and resistance to interrogation that CIA interrogators cited in their requests to use the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques against Hambali and an associated CIA detainee, Lilly, may not have been resistance to interrogation, but rather the result of issues related to culture and their poor English language skills.
Note 634. After an Indonesian speaker was deployed to debrief Hambali, the debriefer got the distinct impression Hambali was just responding yes in the typical Indonesian cultural manner when they do not comprehend a question. The CIA cable then noted that, just to clarify, the Indonesian-speaking debriefer then posed the same question in Indonesian, and without pause, Hambali replied with a direct contradiction, claiming that on 20th of September 2001, he was in Karachi, not Kandahar. A January 2004 cable stated that Lilly is of limited value, adding that his English is very poor and we do not have a Malay linguist.
6. After the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques, CIA headquarters questions detention of detainee and recommends release. Detainee transferred to U.S. military custody and held for an additional 4 years. In October 2003, the CIA interrogated Arsala Khan, an Afghan national in his mid-50s, who is believed to have assisted Osama bin Laden in his escape through the Tora Bora Mountains in late 2001. After 56 hours of standing sleep deprivation, Arsala Khan was described as barely able to enunciate and being visibly shaken by his hallucinations depicting dogs mauling and killing his sons and family. According to CIA cables, Arsala Khan stated that the interrogator was responsible for killing them and feeding them to the dogs. Arsala Khan was subsequently allowed to sleep. 2 days later, however, the interrogators returned him to standing sleep deprivation. After subjecting Khan to 21 additional hours of sleep deprivation, interrogators stopped using the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques due to lack of information from Arsala Khan pinning him directly to a recent activity. 3 days after the reporting about Khan's hallucinations, and after the interrogators had already subjected Khan to the additional 21 hours of standing sleep deprivation beyond the initial 56 hours, CIA headquarters sent a cable stating that RDG and the Office of Medical Services believe that Arsala Khan should not be subjected to additional standing sleep deprivation beyond the 56 hours because of his hallucinations. After approximately a month of detention and the extensive use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques on Arsala Khan, the CIA concluded that the detainee Arsala Khan does not appear to be the subject involved in current plans or activities against U.S. personnel or facilities, and recommended that he be released to his village with a cash payment. CIA interrogators at detention site Cobalt instead transferred him to U.S. military custody, where he was held for an additional 4 years, despite the development of significant intelligence indicating that the source who had reported that Arsala Khan had aided Osama bin Laden had a vendetta against Arsala Khan's family. 7. A year after detention site Cobalt opens, the CIA reports unsettling discovery that we are holding a number of detainees about whom we know very little. In the fall of 2003, CIA officers began to take a closer look at the CIA detainees being held in country redacted, raising concerns about both the number and types of detainees being held by the CIA. CIA officers in country redacted provided a list of CIA detainees to CIA headquarters, resulting in the observation by CIA headquarters that they had not previously had the names of all 44 CIA detainees being held in that country. At the direction of CIA headquarters, the station in country redacted completed an exhaustive search of all available records in an attempt to develop a clearer understanding of the CIA detainees. A December 2003 cable from the station in country redacted to CIA headquarters stated that, "In the process of this research, we have made the unsettling discovery that we are holding a number of detainees about whom we know very little. The majority of CIA detainees in country redacted have not been debriefed for months, and in some cases for over a year. Many of them appear to us to have no further intelligence value for the CIA, and should more properly be turned over to the U.S. military, to country redacted authorities, or to third countries for further investigation and possible prosecution. In a few cases, there does not appear to be enough evidence to continue incarceration, and if this is in fact the case, the detainees should be released." Records indicate that all of these CIA detainees had been kept in solitary confinement. The vast majority of these detainees were later released, with some receiving CIA payments for having been held in detention. 8. CIA detention sites in country redacted lack sufficient personnel and translators to support the interrogations of detainees. Throughout 2003, the CIA lacked sufficient personnel and adequate translators to conduct debriefings and interrogations in country redacted. Because of this personnel shortage, a number of detainees who were transferred to CIA custody were not interrogated or debriefed by anyone for days or weeks after their arrival at CIA detention facilities in country redacted. As noted in a cable from the CIA station in country redacted in April 2003, station is supporting the debriefing and/or interrogation of a large number of individuals, and is constrained by a lack of personnel which would allow us to fully process them in a timely manner.
I. Other medical, psychological, and behavioral issues. 1. CIA interrogations take precedence over medical care. While CIA headquarters informed the Department of Justice in July 2002 that steps will be taken to ensure that Abu Zubaydah's injury is not in any way exacerbated by the use of these enhanced interrogation methods, CIA headquarters informed CIA interrogators that the interrogation process would take precedence over Abu Zubaydah's medical care. Beginning on August 4, 2002, Abu Zubaydah was kept naked, fed a bare-bones liquid diet, and subjected to the non-stop use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. On August 15, 2002, medical personnel described how Abu Zubaydah's interrogation resulted in the steady deterioration of his surgical wound from April 2002.
Note, 649. An email to OMS stated, "We are currently providing absolute minimum wound care, as evidenced by the steady deterioration of the wound. Abu Zubaydah has no opportunity to practice any form of hygienic self-care. He's filthy. The physical nature of this phase dictates multiple physical stresses. His reaction to today's activity is, I believe, the culprit for the superior edge separation. And nutrition is bare bones, 6 cans of Ensure daily."
On August 20th, 2002, medical officials wrote that Abu Zubaydah's wound had undergone significant deterioration. Later, after one of Abu Zubaydah's eyes began to deteriorate, CIA officers requested a test of Abu Zubaydah's other eye, stating that the request was driven by our intelligence needs, vice humanitarian concern for AZ. The cable relayed, "We have a lot riding upon his ability to see, read, and write." In April 2003, CIA detainees Abu Hazim and Abd al-Karim each broke a foot while trying to escape capture and were placed in casts. CIA cables requesting the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques on the two detainees stated that the interrogators would forego cramped confinement, stress positions, walling, and vertical shackling due to the detainee's injury. Notwithstanding medical concerns related to the injuries, both of these detainees were subjected to one or more of these CIA enhanced interrogation techniques prior to obtaining CIA headquarters approval. In the case of Abu Hazim, on May 4, 2003, the CIA regional medical officer examined Abu Hazim, recommended that he avoid all weight-bearing activities for an additional 5 weeks due to his broken foot. In the case of Abd al-Karim, on April 18, 2003, a CIA physician assistant recommended that al-Karim avoid extended standing for a couple of weeks. 6 days later, on April 24, 2003, CIA headquarters reviewed X-rays of al-Karim's foot, diagnosing him with a broken foot and recommending no weight-bearing and the use of crutches for a total of 3 months. Despite these recommendations, on May 10, 2003, CIA interrogators believed that both Hazim and al-Karim were strong mentally and physically due to their ability to sleep in the sitting position. On May 12, 2003, a different CIA physician assistant, who had not been involved in the previous examinations determining the need for the detainees to avoid weight-bearing, stated that it was his opinion that Abu Hazim and Abd al-Karim's injuries were sufficiently healed to allow being placed in the standing sleep deprivation position. He further reported that he had consulted with CIA Office of Medical Services via secure phone, and OMS medical officer concurred in this assessment. CIA headquarters approved the use of standing sleep deprivation against both detainees shortly thereafter. As a result, both detainees were placed in standing sleep deprivation. Abu Hazim underwent 52 hours of standing sleep deprivation from June 3rd to 5th, 2003, and Abd al-Karim underwent an unspecified period of standing sleep deprivation on May 15, 2003. CIA detainee Asadallah was left in the standing sleep deprivation position despite a sprained ankle. Later, when Asadallah was placed in stress positions on his knees, he complained of discomfort and asked to sit. Asadallah was told he could not sit unless he answered questions truthfully.
Note, 665. Asadallah was also placed in a small isolation box for 30 minutes, without authorization and without discussion of how the technique would affect his ankle. While CIA records contain information on other detainee medical complaints, see Volume 3, those records also suggest that detainee medical complaints could be underreported in CIA medical records. For example, CIA medical records consistently report that CIA detainee Ramzi bin al-Shib had no medical complaints. However, CIA interrogation records indicate that when bin al-Shib had previously complained of ailments to CIA personnel, he was subjected to the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques and told by CIA interrogators that his medical condition was not of concern to the CIA. In testimony on April 12, 2007, CIA Director Michael Hayden referenced medical care of detainees in the context of the ICRC report on CIA detentions. Hayden testified to the committee, "The medical section of the ICRC report concludes that the association of CIA medical officers with the interrogation program is contrary to internal standards of medical ethics. That is just wrong. The role of CIA medical officers in the detainee program is and always has been and always will be to ensure the safety and the well-being of the detainee. The placement of medical officers during the interrogation techniques represents an extra measure of caution. Our medical officers do not recommend the employment or continuation of any procedures or techniques. The allegation in the report that a CIA medical officer threatened a detainee, stating that medical care was conditional on cooperation, is blatantly false. Health care has always been administered based on detainee needs. It's neither policy nor practice to link medical care to any other aspect of the detainee program." This testimony was incongruent with CIA records.
2. CIA detainees exhibit psychological and behavioral issues. Psychological and behavioral problems experienced by CIA detainees who were held in austere conditions and in solitary confinement also posed management challenges for the CIA. For example, later in his detention, Ramzi bin al-Shib exhibited behavioral and psychological problems, including visions, paranoia, insomnia, and attempts at self-harm. CIA psychologists linked bin al-Shibh's deteriorating mental state to his isolation and inability to cope with his long-term detention. Similarly, Abd al-Rahim al-Nashiri's unpredictable and disruptive behavior in detention made him one of the most difficult detainees for the CIA to manage. Al-Nashiri engaged in repeated belligerent acts, including throwing his food tray, attempting to assault detention site personnel, and trying to damage items in his cell. Over a period of years, al-Nashiri accused the CIA staff of drugging or poisoning his food and complained of bodily pain and insomnia. As noted, at one point, al-Nashiri launched a short-lived hunger strike, and the CIA responded by force-feeding him rectally. An October 2004 psychological assessment of al-Nashiri was used by the CIA to advance its discussion with National Security Council officials on establishing an endgame for the program. In July 2005, CIA headquarters expressed concern regarding al-Nashiri's continued state of depression and uncooperative attitude. Days later, a CIA psychologist assessed that al-Nashiri was on the verge of a breakdown. Beginning in March 2004, and continuing until his rendition to U.S. military custody at Guantanamo Bay in September 2006, Majid Khan engaged in a series of hunger strikes and attempts at self-mutilation that required significant attention from CIA detention site personnel. In response to Majid Khan's hunger strikes, medical personnel implemented various techniques to provide fluids and nutrients, including the use of a nasogastric tube and the provision of intravenous fluids. CIA records indicate that Majid Khan cooperated with the feedings and was permitted to infuse the fluids and nutrients himself. After approximately 3 weeks, the CIA developed a more aggressive treatment regimen without unnecessary conversation. Majid Khan was then subjected to involuntary rectal feeding and rectal hydration, which included 2 bottles of Ensure. Later that same day, Majid Khan's lunch tray, consisting of hummus, pasta with sauce, nuts, and raisins, was pureed and rectally infused. Additional sessions of rectal feeding and hydration followed. In addition to his hunger strikes, Majid Khan engaged in acts of self-harm that included attempting to cut his wrist on 2 occasions, an attempt to chew into his arm at the inner elbow, an attempt to cut a vein in the top of his foot, and an attempt to cut into his skin at the elbow joint using a filed toothbrush. J. The CIA seeks reaffirmation of the CIA's detention and interrogation program in 2003. Administration statements about the humane treatment of detainees raise concerns at the CIA about possible lack of policy support for CIA interrogation activities. On several occasions in early 2003, CIA General Counsel Scott Mueller expressed concern to the National Security Council principals, White House staff, and Department of Justice personnel that the CIA's program might be inconsistent with public statements from the administration that the U.S. government's treatment of detainees was humane. CIA General Counsel Mueller, therefore, sought to verify with White House and Department of Justice personnel that a February 7, 2002 presidential memorandum requiring the U.S. military to treat detainees humanely did not apply to the CIA. Following those discussions in early 2003, the White House press secretary was advised to avoid using the term humane treatment when discussing the detention of al-Qaeda and Taliban personnel. In mid-2003, CIA officials also engaged in discussions with the Department of Justice, the Department of Defense, and attorneys in the White House on whether representations could be made that the U.S. government complied with certain requirements arising out of the Convention Against Torture, namely, that the treatment of detainees was consistent with constitutional standards in the 5th, 8th, and 14th Amendments. In late July 2003, after numerous interagency discussions, William Haynes, the General Counsel of the Department of Defense, responded to a letter from Senator Patrick Leahy stating that it was U.S. policy to comply with these standards. According to a memorandum from the CIA's, redacted, CTC Legal, redacted, the August 1, 2002 OLC opinion provided a legal safe harbor for the CIA's use of its enhanced interrogation techniques. The August 1, 2002 opinion did not, however, address the constitutional standards described in the letter from William Haynes. In July 2003, after the White House made a number of statements again suggesting that U.S. treatments of detainees was humane, the CIA asked the National Security Advisor for policy reaffirmation of the CIA's use of its enhanced interrogation techniques. During the time that request was being considered, CIA headquarters stopped approving requests from CIA officers to use the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. Because of this stand-down, CIA interrogators, with CIA headquarters approval, instead used repeated applications of the CIA's standard interrogation techniques. These standard techniques were coercive, but not considered to be as coercive as the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. At this time, sleep deprivation beyond 72 hours was considered an enhanced interrogation technique, while sleep deprivation under 72 hours was defined as a standard CIA interrogation technique. To avoid using an enhanced interrogation technique, CIA officers subjected Khalad bin Attash to 70 hours of standing sleep deprivation, 2 hours less than the maximum. After allowing him 4 hours of sleep, bin Attash was subjected to an additional 23 hours of standing sleep deprivation, followed immediately by 20 hours of sedated sleep deprivation. Unlike during most of the CIA's interrogation program, during the time that CIA headquarters was seeking policy reaffirmation, the CIA responded to infractions in the interrogation program as reported through CIA cables and other communications. Although redacted, the chief of the interrogation program in RDG does not appear to have been investigated or reprimanded for training interrogators on the abdominal slap before its use was approved, training significant numbers of new interrogators to conduct interrogations on potentially compliant detainees, or conducting large numbers of water dowsing on detainees without requesting or obtaining authorization. The CIA removed his certification to conduct interrogations in late July 2003 for placing a broom handle behind the knees of a detainee while that detainee was in a stress position. CIA headquarters also decertified two other interrogators, redacted, CIA Officer 1, and redacted, in the same period, although there are no official records of why those decertifications occurred. 2. The CIA provides inaccurate information to select members of the National Security Council, represents that termination of this program will result in loss of life, possibly extensive. Policymakers reauthorize program. On July 29, 2003, DCI Tenet and CIA General Counsel Mueller attended a meeting with Vice President Cheney, National Security Advisor Rice, Attorney General Ashcroft, and White House Counsel Gonzalez, among others, seeking policy reaffirmation of its coercive interrogation program. The presentation included a list of the CIA's standard and enhanced interrogation techniques. CIA General Counsel Mueller also provided a description of the waterboard interrogation technique, including the inaccurate representation that it had been used against KSM 119 times and Abu Zubaydah 42 times. the presentation warned National Security Council principals in attendance that termination of this program will result in loss of life, possibly extensive. The CIA officers further noted that 50% of CIA intelligence reports on Al-Qaeda were derived from detainee reporting, and that major threats were countered and attacks averted because of the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. The CIA provided specific examples of attacks averted as a result of using the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques, including references to the U.S. consulate in Karachi, the Heathrow plot, the Second Wave plot, and Ayman Faris. As described later in the summary and in greater detail in Volume 2, these claims were inaccurate. After the CIA's presentation, Vice President Cheney stated, and National Security Advisor Rice agreed, that the CIA was executing administration policy in carrying out its interrogation program. The National Security Council principals at the July 2003 briefing initially concluded that it was not necessary or advisable to have a full principals committee meeting to review and reaffirm the program. The CIA email noted that the official reason for not having a full briefing was to avoid press disclosures, but added that it is clear to us from some of the run-up meetings we had with White House counsel that the White House is extremely concerned Secretary of State Powell would blow his stack if he were briefed on what's been going on. National Security Advisor Rice, however, subsequently decided that Secretary of State Colin Powell and Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld should be briefed on the CIA interrogation program prior to recertification of the covert action. As described, both were then formally briefed on the CIA program for the first time in a 25-minute briefing on September 16, 2003. On September 4, 2003, CIA records indicate that CIA officials may have provided Chairman Roberts, Vice Chairman Rockefeller, and their staff directors a briefing regarding the administration's reaffirmation of the program. Neither the CIA nor the committee has a contemporaneous report on the content of the briefing or any confirmation that the briefing occurred.
K. Additional Oversight and Outside Pressure in 2004, ICRC, Inspector General, Congress, and the U.S. Supreme Court. 1. ICRC pressure leads to detainee transfers. Department of Defense official informs the CIA that the U.S. government should not be in the position of causing people to disappear. The CIA provides inaccurate information on CIA detainee to the Department of Defense. In January 2004, the ICRC sent a letter to Redacted, indicating that it was aware that the United States government was holding unacknowledged detainees in several facilities in country, Redacted, incommunicado for extensive periods of time, subjected to unacceptable conditions of internment, to ill treatment and torture, while deprived of any possible recourse. According to the CIA, the letter included a fairly complete list of CIA detainees to whom the ICRC had not had access. This prompted CIA headquarters to conclude that it was necessary to reduce the number of detainees in CIA custody. The CIA subsequently transferred at least 25 of its detainees in country, redacted, to the U.S. military and foreign governments. The CIA also released 5 detainees. The CIA provided a factually incorrect description to the Department of Defense concerning one of the 18 CIA detainees transferred to U.S. military custody in March 2004. The transfer letter described CIA detainee Ali John as the most trusted bodyguard of Jalal Uddin Haqqani, a top Al-Qaeda target of the U.S. government, who was captured in the village of Redacted in June 2002. Although there was an individual named Ali John captured in the village of Redacted in June 2002, CIA records indicate that he was not the detainee being held by the CIA in the country, redacted, facility. The Ali John in CIA custody was apprehended circa early August 2003 during the U.S. military operation, redacted, in Zormat Valley, Paktia Province, Afghanistan. CIA records indicate that Ali John was transferred to CIA custody after his satellite phone rang while he was in military custody, and the translator indicated the caller was speaking in Arabic. After his transfer to U.S. military custody, Ali John was eventually released in July 2004. In response to the ICRC's formal complaint about detainees being kept in country redacted without ICRC access, State Department officials met with senior ICRC officials in Geneva and indicated that it was U.S. policy to encourage all countries to provide ICRC access to detainees, including country redacted. While the State Department made these official representations to the ICRC, the CIA was repeatedly directing the same country to deny the ICRC access to the CIA detainees. In June 2004, the Secretary of State ordered the U.S. ambassador in that country to deliver a demarche, in essence demanding the country provide full access to all country-redacted detainees, which included detainees being held at the CIA's behest. These conflicting messages from the United States government, as well as increased ICRC pressure on the country for failing to provide access, created significant tension between the United States and the country in question. Later that year, in advance of a National Security Council Principals Committee meeting on September 14, 2004, officials from the Department of Defense called the CIA to inform the CIA that Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul Wolfowitz would not support the CIA's position that notifying the ICRC of all detainees in U.S. government custody would harm U.S. national security. According to an internal CIA email following the call, the Deputy Secretary of Defense had listened to the CIA's arguments for nondisclosure but believed that it was time for full notification. The email stated that the Department of Defense supported the U.S. government's position that there should be full disclosure to the ICRC unless there were compelling reasons of military necessity or national security. The email added that the Department of Defense did not believe an adequate articulation of military necessity or national security reasons warranting nondisclosure existed, that DOD is tired of taking hits for CIA ghost detainees, and that the U.S. government should not be in the position of causing people to disappear. Despite numerous meetings and communications within the executive branch throughout 2004, the United States did not formally respond to the January 6, 2004 ICRC letter until June 13, 2005. 2. CIA leadership calls Draft Inspector General special review of the program imbalanced and inaccurate, responds with inaccurate information. CIA seeks to limit further review of the CIA's detention and interrogation program by the Inspector General. The CIA's Office of the Inspector General, OIG, was first informed of the CIA's detention and interrogation program in November 2002, 9 months after Abu Zubaydah became the CIA's first detainee. As described, the information was conveyed by the DDO, who also informed the OIG of the death of Gul Rahman. In January 2003, the DDO further requested that the OIG investigate allegations of unauthorized interrogation techniques against Abd al-Rahim al-Nashiri. Separately, the OIG received information that some employees were concerned that certain covert agency activities at an overseas detention and interrogation site might involve violations of human rights, according to the OIG's special review. During the course of the OIG's interviews, numerous CIA officers expressed concerns about the CIA's lack of preparedness for the detention and interrogation of Abu Zubaydah.
Note, 721. The chief of station in the country that hosted the CIA's first detention site told the OIG that the reports officers did not know what was required of them, analysts were not knowledgeable of the target, translators were not native Arab speakers, and at least one of the chiefs of base had limited field experience. According to Redacted of CTC Legal, there was no screening procedure in place for officers assigned to detention site Green.
Other CIA officers expressed concern about the analytical assumptions driving interrogations, as well as the lack of language and cultural background among members of the interrogation teams.
Note 722. In addition to the statements that the OIG described above regarding the interrogation of Abu Zubaydah, CIA officers expressed more general concerns. As redacted noted, the assumptions at CIA headquarters that Abu Zubaydah knew everything about al-Qaeda, including details of the next attack, reflected how the analyst versus interrogator issue had been around from day one. According to Chief of Interrogations redacted, subject matter experts often provided interrogation requirements that were not valid or well thought out, providing the example of Mustafa al-Hawsawi. Senior CIA interrogator redacted told the OIG that interrogators suffered from a lack of substantive requirements from CIA headquarters, and that in every case so far, headquarters' model of what the detainee should know is flawed. Redacted told the OIG that, "I do not want to beat up a man based on what headquarters says he should know," commenting that, "I want my best shot on something he, the detainee, knows, not a fishing expedition on things he should know." Two interviewees told the OIG that requirements were sometimes based on inaccurate or improperly translated intercepts.
Some CIA officers described pressure from CIA headquarters to use the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques, which they attributed to faulty analytical assumptions about what detainees should know.
Note 724. According to redacted of CTC Legal, the seventh floor CIA leadership can complicate the process because of the mindset that interrogations are the silver bullet and CIA leadership is expecting immediate results. Senior interrogator redacted provided the example of Khalad bin Attash, who, he told the OIG, was determined by the chief of base at detention site Blue not to warrant the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. According to Redacted, debriefer Redacted called Alec Station and told them to go to the mat in advocating for the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques, claiming that Ben Attash was holding back information. Redacted described the inherent tension that occasionally exists between officers at the interrogation facilities and those at headquarters who view the detainees are withholding information. Redacted provided the example of Abu Yasir al-Jazairi. Redacted also described disagreements on whether to subject detainees to the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques as a field versus headquarters issue. As described, interviewees also described pressure from CIA headquarters related to the interrogations of KSM and Abu Zubaydah.
As the chief of RDG, Redacted, stated to the OIG in a February 2003 interview, CTC does not know a lot about al-Qaeda, and as a result, headquarters analysts have constructed models of what al-Qaeda represents to them. Redacted noted that the agency does not have the linguists or subject matter experts it needs. The question sent from CTC, Osama bin Laden, UBL, to the interrogators are based on SIGINT, signals intelligence,